All right, welcome back to Clowncast. So I have a question for you.
Hit me.
You buy a house, you move in, you're excited, and then you find out the previous owner never trimmed the trees for 15 years. The fireplace is cracked, and there's a furnace in the basement that doesn't work, but also can't be removed without tearing out a wall.
Are you just describing your house right now?
I am absolutely describing my house right now, but here's the thing. This isn't just a homeowner problem. This is a universal pattern. Every system you interact with, your house, your city's bridges, your codebase, your literal body, is carrying unresolved decisions from people who came before you.
Oh, so we're doing an existential crisis episode.
Cool. Love those.
We're doing a tech debt episode, but not just software tech debt, tech debt of the entire living world.
Okay, I know what tech debt is in programming. It's like you wrote something quick and dirty, and now it haunts you.
But you're saying everything works like that.
Everything. And it starts with the guy who actually coined the term, Ward Cunningham. 1992, at a programming conference called Uppsala. He'd been reading this book called Metaphors We Live By, and he needed to explain to his manager, who was a finance person, why the code needed to be written even though it was working fine.
So he picked a money metaphor because his boss spoke money.
Exactly, he said. Shipping first-time code is like going into debt. A little debt speeds development so long as it is paid back promptly. But here's the part everyone gets wrong. And Cunningham actually made a video in 2009 specifically to correct this. He wasn't talking about messy code. He was talking about code that encodes an incomplete understanding of the problem.
Wait, that's a huge difference. So it's not I was lazy, it's I didn't know enough yet.
Right, the debt accrues when you learn more about what you're building, but the old code still reflects the old, wrong model, and you just keep building on top of it.
That's like, okay, this is going to sound nerdy, but that's literally the ship of Theseus problem.
And you just nailed our first metaphor, the ship of Theseus. You know the setup. The ancient Greeks had this thought experiment, Theseus has a ship. Over time, every single plank gets replaced. Is it still the same shit?
And the answer is nobody agrees.
Nobody has agreed for 2,000 years, but here's why it's the perfect frame for today. Every system you inherit, a codebase, a house, a governance, is a ship of Theseus. Planks get replaced, patches get applied, but the shape of the original decisions persists. And at some point you have to ask, is this still the thing it was built to be? Or have we replaced so much that we've lost the plot?
Or the scarier version, have we replaced so little that we're still sailing a rotting ship?
And that's America's infrastructure right now. The American Society of Civil Engineers just released their 2025 report card. The United States got a C.
A C, like the grade.
The grade? And here's the wild part. That's the highest grade we've ever gotten. They were celebrating.
America's infrastructure peaked at a C and we threw a party.
That's like celebrating because you stopped failing.
It gets worse. There are 42,067 structurally deficient bridges in this country right now, carrying 171 million daily crossings. The average bridge is 47 years old against a 50-year design life. We are 3 years from the average bridge in America hitting its expiration date.
I'm never driving again.
The 10-year funding gap to fix all of this? $3.7 trillion. Federal building deferred maintenance alone is $370 billion. Which has doubled since 2017. And the National Parks backlog is $23 billion, and that grew by nearly $10 billion after Congress passed a bill specifically to shrink it.
So we passed a law to pay off the debt and the debt got bigger. That's not a ship of Theseus, that's a ship actively taking on water.
And it maps perfectly to software. Stripe did a study. Developers spend 42% of their time, 17 hours a week, just dealing with tech debt and bad code. That costs $300 billion in lost global GDP annually. Enterprises are spending 30 to 40% of their entire IT budgets just managing accumulated debt.
So almost half of every developer's week is just maintaining someone else's old decisions.
Someone else's old understanding. That's Cunningham's distinction. And now AI is accelerating this at a rate nobody's prepared for.
Oh no!
We talked about this in the Brooms episode, right?
Episode 54, when AI-generated code started introducing security nightmares.
Direct connection. GitClear did a study of 211 million lines of code, the most rigorous data set on AI code quality anyone's produced. In 2024, Duplicated code blocks appeared 8 times more frequently than in prior years. Copy-pasted code overtook refactored code for the first time ever. Code churn. Lines that get reverted within 2 weeks of being written. Nearly doubled. And 41% of all committed code is now AI-assisted.
So AI writes code fast, but it writes code that gets thrown away fast too.
Exactly. AI-generated code has 1.7 times more issues per pull request. Tech debt increases 30 to 41% after teams adopt AI tools. And by year 2 of a managed AI code, maintenance costs hit 4 times traditional levels.
It's like, okay, this is where the elements in metaphor comes in, right? From Mistborn.
I love that you went there. So for anyone who hasn't read Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn, Elemency is a magic system where you literally swallow metals and then burn them inside your body to gain powers. Each metal gives you a different ability. But here's the key. If you burn impure metals, you get sick. The power and the poison come from the same source.
So the inherited code is the metal. You burn it, you get power from it, you can chip features, you can build on top of it. But if the metal is contaminated,
you're poisoning yourself every time you use it. And you can't just not burn metals. That's the whole magic system. You can't just not inherit code. Every system is built on previous systems. The question isn't whether you inherit, it's whether what you inherited is pure enough to burn safely.
An AI is basically flooding the market with cheap and pure metals.
That's exactly right. 92% of US developers are using AI assistance now. It's everywhere, and the code it produces is structurally more disposable, pasted rather than integrated, changed within days. Remember episode 85, Poison Potions, Supply Chain Attacks? Those are inherited dependencies you didn't write and may not understand. Same principle, different vector.
But okay, is the answer just don't use AI or don't inherit anything? Because that seems impossible.
It is impossible. And this is where we need a philosopher, J.K. Chesterton. 1929, he'd propose what's now called Chesterton's fence. The idea is simple. If you see a fence across a road and you don't understand why it's there, do not remove it until you do. It's not a defense of tradition for its own sake. It's a demand for comprehension before demolition.
Understand the debt before you try to pay it off.
And the most catastrophic violation of this principle might be Mao's Four Pests campaign in 1958. He ordered the killing of millions of sparrows because they ate grain. What nobody understood was that sparrows also ate locusts. Without sparrows, locust populations exploded. The Great Chinese Famine followed. 15 to 55 million people died.
Because they tore down the fence they didn't understand.
At civilizational scale, and this connects to something we talked about in the Bureaucracy Spell episode. Episode 99, red tape started as a solution. It became accumulated institutional tech debt. But the answer wasn't to rip it all out. Some of that bureaucracy was load-bearing.
Okay, but how do you tell the difference? How do you know which plank of the ship of thesis is rotten and which one is the only thing keeping the hull together?
That's the essential tension. Thomas Kuhn, the paradigm shift guy, actually wrote about this. Research shows there's an inverted U-curve. Too little innovation and you miss breakthroughs. Too much and you lose coherence. The optimal rate is never zero and never maximum. And there's a software version of this. Fred Brooks called it the second system effect in 1975. The second version of any system is the most dangerous because the architect is now confident and loads it with every deferred ambition from the first project.
Oh, that's Windows Vista Energy.
Windows Vista is the textbook case. 6 years of development, ship broken, and Netscape did the same thing. Rewrote their browser from scratch. Took 3 years. And Internet Explorer ate their entire market share while they were rewriting. Joel Spolsky's autopsy was brutal. He said, when you throw away code and start from scratch, there is absolutely no reason to believe you are going to do a better job.
So the answer to inherited debt isn't burn it down and rebuild. The answer is what? Live with it.
Better than that. And this is where the third metaphor comes in. Kintsugi.
The Japanese thing, where you fix broken pottery with gold.
Yeah, when a bowl breaks, instead of hiding the crack or throwing it away, you repair it with gold lacquer. The crack becomes the most visible part, and the most valuable part. The history of damage is the value.
So the tech debt, the inherited decisions, the old code that reflects an incomplete understanding, you don't erase it.
You integrate it visibly.
And your body already does this. Evolution is the original tech debt machine. The recurrent laryngeal nerve connects your brain to your larynx. In a direct line, that's a few centimeters. But because of how we evolved from fish, The nerve loops all the way down around the aortic arch in your chest and back up. In humans, that's a 30 centimeter diameter. In giraffes, 4 to 5 meters of nerve for a connection that could be inches.
Evolution literally can't refactor.
It can only extend.
It can only add planks to the ship. It can never redesign the hull. And look at vestigial structures. Wisdom teeth optimized for jaw we no longer have. Goosebumps for fur we no longer grow. But here's the kintsugi moment. The appendix. We spent decades calling it useless. Vestigial. Ready to remove. Turns out it might be a safe house for beneficial gut bacteria. A Chesterton's fence we almost tore down.
We almost ripped out the fence and it was protecting the garden the whole time.
And the brain does something fascinating too. Synaptic pruning. Children have roughly twice as many neural connections as adults. During adolescence, your brain aggressively cuts unused connections. Executive function. The thing that makes you an adult comes from subtraction, not addition.
So intelligence is knowing what to cut, not what to add.
Which is the exact opposite of Silicon Valley's instinct. More features, more code, more tools. But when synaptic pruning goes wrong, when it cuts too much or cuts the wrong things, the result can be schizophrenia. Radical pruning without discrimination isn't refinement, it's damage.
So you can't ignore the debt, you can't burn it all down, and you can't just prune indiscriminately. What's left?
The Swiss model. And I know we've talked about Switzerland a few times, but this is different. Look at SBB. Swiss Rail, their on-time rate in 2024 was 93.2%, an all-time record, and Switzerland defines on-time as within 3 minutes. Germany gives you 6, France gives you 5. And here's the kicker. When German trains run late, SBB stops them at the Basel border and transfers passengers to Swiss trains. They protect the system's integrity at the boundary.
They literally refuse to inherit Germany's tech debt.
Exactly, and look at Gruyère cheese, first documented in 1115 AD, 911 years of essentially unchanged production. Same copper vats, same milk requirements, same aging caves, protected by law. They didn't survive by refusing all change. Modern sanitation, absolutely. Different recipe, never. They were extremely specific about what they refused to change.
So the answer is you have to know which planks are the identity of the ship.
And there's an emotional dimension to this that I think people underestimate. There's a word, solastalgia, coined in 2003 by Glenn Albrecht. It means the distress of watching your home environment change while you're still living in it. Not nostalgia, which is missing a place you left. This is the grief of ongoing, inescapable transformation.
That's really specific and really real.
And the 2026 paper extended it to digital solastalgia. When platforms change their UI, their algorithms, their APIs, users experience structurally identical grief. Your digital home is being renovated while you're trying to live in it. Remember episode 106, No Save File? We talked about knowledge that disappears when someone dies. This is the flip side. When inherited systems change around you, you lose the knowledge of how to navigate them.
So it's not just about code or bridges or borders. It's about identity. The ship of Theseus isn't just asking, is it the same ship? It's asking, am I the same sailor?
And I think that's the real takeaway. Edmund Burke, the political philosopher, said society is a partnership between the living, the dead, and those yet to be born. The accumulated tradition encodes wisdom that no single generation can fully articulate. The broken fireplace in my basement, that's someone else's decision that I now have to live with. But the house is standing, the furnace I can't remove. It's load-bearing in ways I don't fully understand yet.
Chesterton's furnace.
Chesterton's furnace, I love that. And the kintsugi version of my house isn't a house where everything works perfectly. It's a house where I can see the history, the gold and the cracks, where the 40-year-old bones tell a story, where I maintain what needs maintaining, improve what I understand well enough to improve, and leave alone what I haven't earned the right to tear out yet.
Burn the pure metals.
Leave the fence until you understand it.
Fix the cracks with gold.
That's the episode. That's the whole thing.
I'm going to go home and apologize to my foundation.
You should. You really should. And hey, next time, I want to dig into something that came up in the research that I couldn't stop thinking about. QWERTY. The keyboard layout you're using right now was designed in the 1870s to prevent typewriter jams. That constraint hasn't existed for decades. And yet it's everywhere. I want to do a full episode on lock-in effects. Why dead solutions persist, from keyboard layouts to railroad gauges to programming languages. When the original problem vanishes, but the solution won't die.
Path dependency. The ghost in the machine.
The ghost that builds the machine. That's next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you then.
Don't tear down any fences while we're gone.